And now, Forward with Falk. Join Scranton political observer Dave Falk and WFTE's Jake Rosen as they navigate their way through the political thicket. Well, Dave, the Pennsylvania voting is over. The counting is not over, but more or less we know who won most of the races. The Senate race on the Republican side, of course, we don't yet know. But in general, what do you think?
Well, it was came down to what people were pretty much saying. On the governor's side, Mastriano won. On the Pennsylvania lieutenant governor side, the Democratic side, Austin Davis, who was Josh Shapiro's handpicked candidate, won. But that Senate race is the everybody said it was going to be close. It was too tough to call, and it proved to be that way.
You mean on the Republican side?
On the Republican side. And the Democratic side was pretty much as people thought. Fetterman won. I think what surprised is how big he won. He carried every single county. And Connor Lamb down in Philadelphia, which was where he got the endorsements of all the party bigwigs, he came in third to Malcolm Kenyatta second. So that, you know, just because the party regulars are endorsing doesn't mean that the rank and file follow suit.
You can go beyond that. The party regulars' endorsement seemed to provoke the rank and file not to follow suit if Fetterman won every county.
Yeah. And quite frankly, I didn't see any evidence of a Lamb organization. It was one of these things that I think he just ran it from the top and not from the bottom. Fetterman was out there in the counties, mostly outside of Philadelphia counties, meeting with people and doing those things. I was kind of surprised that I didn't get called from either camp supporters in Lackawanna County to have a meet and a greet. I didn't know if either of them even made it here. It was that kind of an election, but
who? That was you mean Lamb?
Both Lamb or Fetterman. Nobody contacted me for Fetterman or Lamb. There's going to be events now, but I think the big thing that the Democrats are concentrating on is the governor's race because of who the Republicans nominated, and. You know, in that race, that also was where the vote went against the party establishment. The Republican establishment wanted anybody but Mastriano, and they realized too late that they, with the split in the number of people running, that they couldn't overcome. Him. And in the last week, they enticed a couple of people to drop out in favor of Lou Barletta, who had been running close to Mastriano for most of the race. Melissa Hart, the former congresswoman from Erie, she dropped out. Jake Corman, the Senate leader, dropped out. And they tried to get Bill McSwain to drop out, and he wouldn't do it. But it wouldn't have mattered. It really wouldn't have mattered at that point because, unless you got 100% of all of their votes together, which was never going to happen. Mastriano's the candidate. And in his victory address, he showed absolutely no inclination to pivot from his extremist views.
Let me ask you this. How is it that he can take the oath of office when he makes speech after speech explaining that he doesn't believe in the Constitution? The oath of office says he'll defend and uphold the Constitution. He tells you outright he thinks the Constitution should be subordinated to a theocratic rule by Protestant church leaders.
Well, only certain types of Protestant.
Well, okay, fair enough. But definitely not the Constitution is supreme.
Well, they redefine things. You know, he's redefining the Constitution to fit his needs. The First Amendment, he believes in freedom of religion, that part, but the First Amendment has two references to religion. One is the Free Exercise Clause, and the other is the Non-Establishment Clause. That one kind of goes away.
Yeah, they don't believe that. They believe just the opposite.
Right, right. But they believe that they've been sent here on a mission, on a holy mission. Wasn't it the movie The Blues Brothers, On a Mission from God? You know, that they were involved in. And you know, I saw that in his victory address. It's something to watch on YouTube. His the level of his comfort, his I would call it over the edge on arrogance of his position, that I'm right, I'm on God's side, there should be no God, you know, and there should be no question. That ends the debate.
Yeah,
this is a holy war. I represent everything that's good and everything else is evil. That kind of thing, and it's off the charts in many ways. But he's on the ticket. And anytime anybody's on the ticket, you never know what could happen.
I understand that, but I think that people have got to realize, and people who are running against him have got to emphasize, that this whole movement that he is a part of, and maybe the foremost candidate of, is deeply anti-constitutional, anti-American tradition. It's even anti-Christian tradition. It certainly doesn't carry forward the history of the Christian religion. After all, the Christian religion, when it was born, said, render unto Caesar what is Caesar's and unto God what is God. In other words, there's a distinction between the civil and the religious. And each rules in its area. That's on the part of the Christian religious people. This guy says, no, that's not right. Well, doesn't he have to take that up with the apostles?
Well, I think he just believes he speaks for the apostles or whatever. He, you know, up to about 50 years ago, the evangelical movement, which was still, you know, in fairly nascent stages, did not want to involve itself in politics.
Right.
And then along around the Ronald Reagan era, the Republicans saw an opportunity to co-opt those religious conservatives and to bring them in the movement. And then you started getting the moral majority with Jerry Falwell and Pat Robertson. And it's been game on ever since. And
the story, of course, is that they wanted their church schools to get government money. That was the whole point. When the civil rights movement forced the desegregation of the public schools, and these right-wing fundamentalist churches set up a bunch of Christian academies, which were really white academies, to prevent the integration of the public schools, they wanted the government to pay for those schools. And that's what got them involved in politics.
Well, that's the beginning chapter, or the beginning introduction of Democracy in Chains.
Yeah.
Nancy McLean explains that quite well.
Right.
That's where they started. They also, there were a couple of Supreme Court decisions, that being one of them, the Bob Jones U case, which said that Bob, as long as they were discriminating, that they couldn't get public funds. And, you know, they had the prayer in public school issue, and then they had the abortion issue, and they grasped onto that. And again, that goes to strategizing, where they've been thinking long term, and gradually working towards the moment that we've had on the Alito Opinion League in that regard. But first you have to elect people. and they've been working pretty hard at it.
Well, if I look at my county and I take a look at the results and compare them with the results of the primary 4 years ago, it's clear that the momentum is in the Republican Party. I mean, the vote, the percentage of Republicans who voted in the primary in our county, now this is a typical rural county. The vote, the Democrats are a third of the vote, and the Republicans are two-thirds of the vote. But in terms of who came out, the Republicans increased their vote by something almost 50% over 2018. The Democrats increased their vote, but only by 36%. 36 doesn't beat 50, especially when you start out 30 points down.
Yeah. Well, you mentioned there's a lot of offices that Democrats aren't even putting up candidates on a local basis.
Well, that's true. And if you look at the votes for the Democratic County Committee, which was part of this election, you discover that for most of the places, there were no candidates who ran for the Democratic County Committee, which means there's no Democratic organization in most of the precincts of the county. Well, you can't win elections that way.
No.
And if you exist to win elections, which is what they exist for, I mean, they don't exist to do anything else. It's an electoral party. It means you don't exist.
Yeah. That, you know, that's going to be what it comes down to. Well, with the two races, we still don't know about the Senate race.
The
Republican Senate race.
Right.
And that's going to be interesting because whether or not they close ranks around whoever wins, Oz or McCormick.
Well, that's the key, right? That's the key.
Yeah. Now, the third party in that race, Kathy Barnett, indicated that she wouldn't, you know, if she didn't win, she wasn't going to support anybody. But I don't know how that's going to translate. The way that the Senate race worked out, where McCormick and Oz went hammer and tong at slamming each other, you would think has some residual effects in depressing the Republican vote for the ultimate winner because of what each said about each other. But I don't know, because, you know, you have that general theory that Republicans fall in line. Democrats fall in love, Republicans fall in line after having a squabble. We'll have to see.
That's a different Republican Party that you drew that, and other people have drawn that conclusion from. Don't forget, this party, which Trump has transformed, is no longer a confederation of local parties. This is a national party, and it has a national policy, a national line. And you either knuckle under and agree and carry out that national line, or you're not in the party. And it's not a local party. I mean, the Senate candidates on the Republican side in Pennsylvania, neither one of them are really from Pennsylvania. They're people who parachuted in. And the money for the campaigns is not local money. It's national money. And increasingly, that's true on the House side, on the congressional side, where important races are concerned. It's not a local race. It's a national race. The candidates who stand on the Republican side stand on a national platform, not on a local platform. And their money is national money, if money is important. The Democrats are not like that, but the Republicans are like that, and that gives them a great deal of cohesive strength.
Well, yeah, but there's still a couple things to be said on the Republican side. You know, their traditional strength was in what we call the collar counties around Philadelphia, Chester, Delaware, Bucks, and Montgomery. And that has faded dramatically in recent years. They did a little bit better in 2020 than they had been doing. Part of that is, you know, I mentioned the abortion issue. What we used to call the more moderate Republicans down in those areas, whether they're so turned off by what the national Republican policy is on this, that they continue to support Democrats. over Republicans. We have to see. And then the other thing about funding is, I mentioned the last couple of weeks, there is a Pennsylvania funder by the name of Jeffrey Yaz, who's part of that libertarian network, who is willing to put a lot of his money. Someone has said that he may be the richest man in Pennsylvania, and he's going to be, supposedly, he has about $75 million to spread around of his own money.
Well, of course, Mastriano, he benefited from Coke money, right?
Yeah.
Not Coke the drink, Coke the brothers.
Coke the brothers type of money, and, you know, the Trumpers, the Trump endorsement there. There was always a question whether Trump helped carry Mastriano or he just jumped on the bandwagon. But it probably was a little bit of both. It was a little bit of both. Obviously, he did not have as much sway in the Oz McCormick election as he did in the gubernatorial election.
You know, in my county, interestingly enough, Mastriano didn't win the county. Barletta did.
Yeah, Barletta had most of the Northeast and the old coal country. He took Lackawanna, Luzerne, Monroe,
Susquehanna,
Susquehanna, Carbon, and Schuylkill counties, but it wasn't nearly enough. It wasn't nearly enough. And Barletta said that this is my last hurrah. He said he's going to vote for Mastriano, but he's done with politics. But we had that phenomenon, of course, that Barletta was all in for Donald Trump, and when push came to shove, Trump threw him overboard. That's another lesson the Republicans have never learned, that the loyalty only flows one way with Donald Trump.
Well, it doesn't matter, because there's plenty of people who are determined to be racists and, anti-immigrant, right-wing in terms of social policy, ferociously anti-labor, because racism trumps all. Racism covers it all, and unites it all. And that's what Trump's leading, that kind of a party, and that's what this party is.
Yeah, all these descendants of immigrants and workers who fought hard for the labor movement, turning against what their grandparents fought for, and represented. But that's a reality that the Democrats have to figure it out. That's where Fetterman, he seems to have been able to break through that Republican monopoly on those things. Of course, the big question with Fetterman that came up at the very end was his health, and whether going forward, and he's going to have to prove that he's able, and up for the job. It was one thing to have a blood clot; it's another thing to have both a pacemaker and a defibrillator.
But it's also true that once you have a pacemaker and a defibrillator, you're pretty good.
You should be.
Yeah.
You've
overcome the foibles of flesh because you've got the strength of titanium.
Yeah. Of course, we've had a vice president of the United States that lived with a heart transplant and a pacemaker.
That's right. Dick Cheney. And he wasn't an inactive vice president, right? He was one of the most active of vice presidents. So... Fetterman ought to be able to demonstrate that he's in good shape because, objectively, he ought to be in good shape. And it's true now, he's 6'8", and you think, well, the guy must be really healthy, but really big people are not necessarily really healthy.
No. You just don't know, what his family history is or how he's his eating habits and things like that.
But I'll tell you one thing, his wife is going to take care of him and whip him into shape. She's no shrinking violet.
I was just going to, we started off by saying the same thing. I'll tell you one thing, is that his wife came out as being a star in this thing.
Yeah.
She got in front of the cameras and held her own, more than held her own.
She played a big role when he was mayor of Braddock. She played a big role in the city administration. the centerpiece of his mayorality tenure was that he made Braddock into an arts community and an arts center, and she was responsible for that. She led that.
You know, we didn't see much of Dave McCormick's wife, but if he's the nominee, I think you will. Dana Powell.
Well, she's a big shot, right? She's got a distinguished reactionary political career.
Yes. But she could also be a drag because she works for Goldman Sachs and could be a target.
But they're all Goldman Sachs. His whole campaign is Goldman Sachs.
Yeah.
What he's doing right now is he canvassed all the partners, or and I guess now it's a corporation, so all the big cheeses at Goldman Sachs to make sure that they pony up the money to fight McCormick in court, to fight Oz in court. And apparently they will. It's going to be Goldman Sachs against Trump.
Yeah. Now, we don't see much of Oz's spouse in this race. So it'll be kind of curious to see what happens there. But, you know, we can't begin to, you know, predict this race until we know who the Republican combatant is going to be. And this could last a number of weeks. This could go through court challenges and what have you. All of that creates problems for the Republicans because they can't begin the campaign.
But it gives Shapiro, as the governor's candidate, a big head start. And, of course, it gives Fetterman a head start.
Yeah.
And Fetterman has shown that he takes advantage of the opportunity for a head start, right? He started out the minute that it was possible, he started out. And that's really why he rolled up this big vote.
Yeah. It's more of a head start for Fetterman than Shapiro because Shapiro, you know, Mastriano is going to be out there.
It's true. Mastriano's going to be out there, but he's going to be held back by the fact that the interest on the Republican side is going to be on the senatorial decision. So he's going to have to break through the static about Oz and McCormick. But Shapiro doesn't have that problem.
No, he doesn't. And he's going to be concentrating on raising money and meeting and doing the groundwork.
He's got to do is set up campaigns to get out the vote.
Yep.
Whoever gets out the vote wins the election. That's what it's all about in this election. That's what this shows. That's what these returns show.
Yeah. There has been some polling that show that in regard to that race, that the Democrats are more likely to stick with Shapiro than the Republicans are with Mastriano. But I wouldn't put a lot of stock into that at this point. You just have to see how the polling goes. The early polls have Shapiro up by about 8 points, but neither Shapiro hasn't reached that 50% mark. You know, there were a lot of undecideds. And that doesn't, you know, we didn't know in this election, there were also a lot of undecideds in the Republican gubernatorial and senatorial case. And we didn't know really how they were going to break until the very last minute. We'll have to see if the undecideds break early or not.
Well, there's other news in the country. There's been some interesting essay writing about where the conservative legal establishment goes after they chalk up the win against abortion rights. It's been assumed by many that the next step, of course, is to go after everything covered by privacy rights. So contraception, same-sex marriage, sexual rights in general, rights of women in general.
Yeah, and that's at the state level. I mean, if you saw the Oklahoma law says we're protecting the rights of the unborn from the moment of fertilization.
Right.
Exactly. I don't know how you determine that. But you know that's going to be left in the states. That's where those battles. But you're right. On a national level, there's a whole different agenda that's going to be faced, and that's going to be the pro-business agenda.
That's right. We're
seeing, and we saw this week the Fifth Circuit came out with a split opinion, a 2-1 opinion, saying that the SEC, the Securities Exchange Commission, did not have enforcement rights. That that essentially their administrative hearings were unconstitutional and that they had to have jury trials on every single issue, which would essentially achieve Steve Bannon's goal of destroying the administrative state.
Elena Kagan pointed out, that the structure of the government would be declared unconstitutional.
Yeah, when I started law school, one of my first year classes was administrative law. And that only went back till really the 1930s to the New Deal. And it was a whole different construct from what the law had been previously. But by the 1970s, it had been well established, and now it's 50 years later than that. And, if that decision is upheld on a national basis, and the question is how are they going to handle that? Is it going to be only limited to the Fifth Circuit? Is it going to be appealed, asking for the whole circuit to join in an en banc? Or are they going to go right to the Supreme Court? This is going to be seen as an opportunity by the Supreme Court to really, really, take apart and favor the big money interests. You know, this week they also had an opinion that did that with the Ted Cruz case.
Yes, that's right.
Where they said that the money he collected for his election could be used for whatever purposes he wanted, basically, after the election was over. The minority, Sonia Sotomayor, she points out that it's basically legal bribery at this point. The majority came through with this justification saying, well, since the election's over, you can't be trying to bribe them, which is ridiculous.
You can't bribe politicians except during the times of election?
Well, that's essentially, I think, what the kind of political science that they're peddling.
Well, you know that if it gets to the Supreme Court will knock out the right to regulate business. You'll end up, as we had in the turn of the 19th century into the 20th century, you'll have flour made up mainly of sawdust, right?
Yeah.
You'll have that kind of situation repeated everywhere. You'll have no OSHA. There'll be no safety regulation. You'll have no ability to regulate corporations. Because if that's the case, workers don't have rights and consumers don't have rights. Because if you can't regulate, the rules don't, no rule exists. What you can't regulate can't exist. It's just that simple. Right?
Yeah, all those things like the Consumer Protection Bureau and all of that stuff would be rendered meaningless. And the big one, of course, is the SEC because of stock market manipulations and things like that. I mean,
DEP? The world is faced with overriding climate problems, and the DEP would be rendered unconstitutional.
Yeah.
All right, DEP, that's it for this week.
Yeah. Well, maybe next week we'll know a little bit more about the race, but in any event, we'll see you next week.
At the moment, the Republicans have the strategic ascendancy, no matter which one of their candidates wins in Pennsylvania. That hasn't changed. This primary in Pennsylvania hasn't given the Democrats a push towards setting the agenda. The Republicans are still setting the agenda. That's the case. All right. See you next week.
See you next week.
You've been listening to Forward with Falk. Longtime Scranton political observer Dave Falk and WFTE's Jake Rosen discuss politics. Join them again next week, same time, same place. This program is supported by Argosy Bookshop of New York City, 116 East 59th Street, just down the block from Bloomingdale's. Old and rare books, prints and maps, members of the International League of Antiquarian Booksellers, founding members of the Antiquarian Booksellers Association of America, members of the Appraisers Association of America, on the web at Argosy Books, ArgosyBooks.com. Check them out for books, autographs, maps, and prints.